Well, here we go. Another game in extra innings and another total that is in question. 3-3 Mets and Cubs. And the first pitch of extra innings was a wild pitch uncorked by the Cubs. So the Mets have a man on third base after one pitch in extra innings. Gotta love it. 3-3 is the score at Wrigley Field. The Mets fan over here, I don't think minds all that much.
I would be very pleased if, again, the NL East, which was supposed to be a gangbusters division this year, the Mets are not hitting and currently have a minus 14 run differential. And if they find a way to sneak out of Wrigley with a win tonight, we'll be still be in first place by themselves. So I will take it because the Mets have not played well so far and still are in first place.
It is pretty surprising, and we'll dive into the Mets and then all of baseball here shortly with Dave Zimborski from Fangraphs. But it is surprising when you look at how poorly they've been hitting, and yet they are leading this division, and they are the betting favorite right now. Does that surprise you that the Mets are the favorites to win this division?
Yeah, I still think that's wrong. Atlanta has, even though Atlanta's not performing and Acuna is not in the lineup right now because of injury, Atlanta's still the back-to-back-to-back division champion here. And
I thought you were going a little Tom and Mansky there.
They're really good still. So I would only bet Atlanta on those. Numbers. The Mets should not have to lay a price with the Mets. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, plus 180 right now at DraftKings for the Braves to win the NL East. Padres and Dodgers, three innings in the books. It's scoreless. I'm kicking myself. I like the under first five here. Not home yet. Still two innings to go. But the under first five was four. And we have a scoreless game through three innings because the Padres can't hit.
San Diego, by the way, should be considering Ryan Weathers a better pitcher than Chris Paddock at this point because Paddock is just so erratic now after his unbelievable start in the majors his rookie year. The ego kind of got in the way for him over the last year plus. And Weathers right now, three more scoreless innings, ERA under .8 now, Tim. Last time I checked, pretty good.
It's decent. It's not Corbin Burns, but it's okay.
No, it is.
It's all right. So, yeah, scoreless right now out in Los Angeles as we get the Dodgers and Padres yet again. Switching over to basketball, halftime in Dallas, 62-51 is the halftime score. And as I do a quick calculation, that's 113 points. That's a first half over, folks, on the Mavericks and Lakers there. That was a total of 109.5. And the Mavericks cover, of course, the first half number with ease. They were a 1.5-point favorite. I would imagine from what we've heard, Jeff, that the night is done for Anthony Davis. Played 16 minutes in the first half. Thought that his minutes restriction would be around 15 minutes. If so, 2 of 10 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3. Missed both free throws. 4 rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block, and 4 points. So Anthony Davis just trying to get back in the swing of things with that tendonitis. If it is his night is complete, just 4 points tonight on 2 of 10 shooting.
Did anyone offer props on him tonight? I would imagine not, just because of that minutes restriction.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, so again, this is the result doesn't really matter in this game for the Lakers. They're in good shape. They're going to more than likely stay in the 5 seed this last month and. It was just get Anthony Davis back on the floor so he can get back in the rhythm. So 1 month from now, when the Lakers start their playoff run, and likely in a game one at altitude in Colorado at Denver, Anthony Davis is fully in the swing of things. That's all that matters now, Tim.
Looking back at a couple of results from earlier tonight, we talked about last night at the opener. We liked it was either Milwaukee or pass. The opener was, 6.5 last night we saw?
It was six.
So that thing got bet up to 8. It was sitting there, as you said, 8 most of the day. The Sixers ended this game on, a 14-2 run?
I think it was 17-3.
Land seven.
You still cover if you bet Milwaukee at the last number here at 6.5.
That is true. It closed 6.5, 124-117. The Bucks beat the Sixers. All right, talk a little more baseball coming up here in just a moment. Stick around. It's the Nightcap on VSiN. It is the nightcap here on VSiN. Jeff Parles, Tim Murray with you live from the Circa Sportsbook. Keeping an eye on Dodgers and Padres in the fourth inning as Fernando Tatis leads off with a single there in the top of the fourth inning. We got extra innings in Wrigley Field. And let's keep the baseball discussion going. The senior writer for FanGraphs does a tremendous job. Dan Zimborski joining us right now. And Dan, so much to get to. Let's start with one of the more talked about teams in all of baseball. I saw a lot of Yankee fans very angry today. They won, but they're angry about everything. The season's over. Fire Aaron Boone. What is your take right now on this Yankees team? As you know, surprisingly, I saw you could get, as of a couple days ago, 5-1 to win the AL.
Yeah, you know how it is when a favored team has a really weak start, and they have had a pretty bad start. People start panicking and taking it too seriously. There are reasons to be concerned about the Yankees. My biggest concern is the depth in the rotation when the injuries start. But I think that people have gone a little over the top with some of the things. Like, yeah, you really think like Giancarlo Stanton is done as a hitter? I don't think that's likely the case. Things like that are just kind of weird. There was a specific ugly inning today, but they'll probably be fine.
Dan, I want to keep it in the AL East because a team that I didn't like going into the year, and you tried to talk me out of my under bet with the Boston Red Sox. you were unsuccessful, by the way, Dan. But the Red Sox, even with this bizarro loss tonight where they gave up one hit in nine innings and still managed to lose in extras against Seattle, they're off to a great start, currently sitting at the top of the AL East. Dan, do you think they have the staying power to stay in this thing the whole way through?
Well, I mean, I was skeptical about the Red Sox coming into the season also. I'm like the Yankees, I'm concerned with their rotation depth. They don't really have a plan B anywhere, which is not a great situation to be in. But they've played very well so far. Their bullpen at last check was like in the top five in ERA still. I don't expect that to keep up. But it's a team that's probably around 500. And a team like that can surprise when they get hot. And they have been hot. But I don't expect that to keep going much longer.
Yeah, and I guess I'll try not to bounce around too much geographically, but the Padres, I don't know if it was just a bad series, Dan, against, you know, you face Woodruff, you face Corbin Burns. That's a pretty dynamic duo you're facing, and they're facing Walker Buehler tonight and don't have a run yet. But with this lineup, with Hosmer, with Machado, with Tatis, do you believe that this is just a blip, these struggles that they are having offensively? Are there overall concerns when it comes to the Padres, a team that most believed would be the main rival for the Dodgers to come out of the National League?
I'm not overly concerned about the Padres when it comes to making the playoffs. I still think that they're the second best team in the National League right now. But the problem is at some point, they lose too much ground to the Dodgers to be able to you know, make a serious run at the division title. Say they lose like three or four of these games, suddenly, you know, they're 7, 8, 9 games behind the Dodgers. And that's kind of a problem because even if you think the Dodgers are comparable to the Padres, the Dodgers would have a significant lead at this point, and it would be very, very hard to catch them. And Dodgers, if you know they take the series in a convincing manner, they could probably almost put it on cruise control the rest of the year. I did a piece, and their playoff chances are so strong that they actually, in my projections at least, lost less of in terms of playoff percentage loss if they lost Mookie Betts for this season than the White Sox if they lost Adam Eaton.
Wow.
And I don't think there's any dispute that Betts is a much better player than Eaton is.
Wow.
Dan, you're always good for one just absurd one like that. That's just that's astounding. Again, yes, Mookie Betts is better than Adam Eaton, just for the folks that are wondering.
World Series champion Adam Eaton to you two.
That is true. That is true.
Hey, I had a guy who was if you think that's a crazy comparison, I had a guy who angrily would insist a long time ago that Dave Winfield should not be in the Hall of Fame, but Mookie Wilson should.
Well, I will say this as we get on an Adam Eaton tangent. You know, when the trade, I was in D.C. when the trade went down at the winter meetings, mm-hmm. when the Nats traded Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, Dane Dunning for Adam Eaton. You know, people hadn't really, people in D.C. hadn't heard of Adam Eaton, but you will look at advanced numbers. Adam Eaton was off the charts analytically. So, and it, once again, he was a vital piece to the turnaround and winning a World Series, but. And thus ends the Adam Eaton advanced analytics discussion.
Well, that's probably for the best there, Tim. But Dan, I want to keep it out west, but I want to move to the AL real quick because the Oakland A's started 0-6. They've now won 11 in a row and are tied for the division lead after Seattle's extra inning win tonight. What do you make of this team? What do you make of the A's?
Well, it seems like they kind of do this a lot. They go on these long losing streaks and long winning streaks. I swear that in one of their, you know, Moneyball era seasons, they like lost like 15 games in a row and then won 21 games or something crazy like that. I'm probably lying from my memory, but they do tend to be a fairly streaky team. And I think they have a serious chance of winning the AL West. People panic a little too quickly after the week start, I think, because there's no great team in the division. The Astros have some serious questions. I like the Astros' offense. It hasn't played well so far, but I like their offense. But you worry about their pitching after Greinke. There's a lot of guys who could, you know, throw 4 or 5 inning specials, but nobody who can replace, you know, Verlander or Cole or Morton or the number of pitchers that they've kind of seen depart in the last 4 or 5 years now. I think the A's are a solid team, and they're always very creative about working with their budget and finding, you know, little used players. They're still good at that, even with Billy Bean kind of taking a step back from everything. I think they're, you know, a high 80s team, and that could win the AL West this year.
We're talking to Dan Zimborski from FanGraphs, at D Zimborski on Twitter. I'll let Jeff hang out there quietly for a little bit because the Mets just hit into an inning-ending double play with the bases loaded in the top of the 10th inning. So, but I do want to go to the NL East because this was thought to be the most difficult division from top to bottom, most evenly matched, Dan. What is your biggest takeaway from the first, you know, 2.5 weeks from the NL East? Because you look down at the standings right now, the Mets are in first place, result pending here against the Cubs, but they've got a minus 14 run differential. The Braves have gotten off to a slow start. The Nats, I think it's a borderline miracle that they're 7-9 with the injuries and the, you know, just quiet bats for most part. So what is your big takeaway right now from the NL East?
I still think the Mets are probably the most dangerous team simply because this offseason, unlike past Mets teams, they actually had a plan to kind of have depth in the starting rotation. And that's something, though, the Wilpon era Mets were pretty terrible at. They'd always go into a season with a starting rotation that looked good on paper if everybody stayed healthy, but absolutely no idea what would happen if someone got injured. You know, a pitcher would get injured and it would be the biggest surprise in the world to them. And then they would have to use whatever AAA pitcher they had hanging around. They're like, oh, Walker Lockett, I guess. We didn't really think of this. The Nationals, it is a miracle that they're hanging around 500 because Patrick Corbin has been a mess. Mm-hmm. His slider doesn't slide anymore. He had that lost velocity. You lose Strasburg the way you have. The rotation right now is Max Scherzer and, you know, a shrug emoji, and that's probably not good for the team when you talk about a long season still remaining, still have 90% of the season to go. I think that this division will be fun, maybe not necessarily if you're a fan of the team that finishes third or something, but there's a lot of good baseball being played in this division.
Dan, I want to go to the AL Central real quick because You versus Kansas City Royals fans has always been a fun battle on social media, and the Royals are out to a pretty good start right now. 10-7, leading the division. The Twins, who you liked before the year, or your numbers at least liked a lot before the year, off to a bad start at 6-11. White Sox currently at 500. Just, Dan, how do you handicap this division right now as it sits here here in the latter stages of April?
The Royals have made it more interesting. I even wrote a piece today. Yes, the Royals can win the AL Central.
Oh, my goodness.
So I did say something positive about them. It's one of the things about the Royals, which I do like, is that in an offseason where a lot of teams that weren't, you know, first-tier contenders did not invest very heavily in the free agent market this offseason. While the Royals always had this belief that they're going to win, they value winning the wild card, and so they, you know, they've kept their core together. They picked up Carlos Santana and Mike Minor, acquired Andrew Benintendi. I like what the Royals did in that way. It's nice to have someone who's like optimistic and not cynical like me and the other stat guys. Now they do have, you know, an edge over the Twins, four games. That's not nothing. And they were close enough to 500 probably in, you know, the projections that they do have a chance of fighting for the divisional title. My projections had them up to 10-15%, depending on the assumptions you make. And they're also a team that's going to be more willing than most to make an addition at the trade deadline because they value winning the wild card probably more than most teams in baseball do. I still think probably now the White Sox are the favorite simply because they have the edge over the Twins. They have the rotation depth, but the Royals could, you know, be a monkey wrench in the works.
Dan, the Dodgers, you know, when we talk about disappointments, the Braves start, the Yankees start, certainly. Dodgers are 14-4, and Cody Bellinger's on the DL. So it is, you got guys like Zach McKinstry coming up and wreaking havoc at times. The over-under on wins was, you know, 104. It was record-setting how high it was. What is the flaw that you see in this Dodgers team? You know, they're minus 110 right now to win the National League pennant. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous on April 22nd that a team is odds on to win the pennant, and it's hard to disagree also with those odds.
Yeah, what it came down to is that coming into the season, at least the Zips projection system had the Dodgers and Padres with the most wins it's ever projected for the top two teams in a division. It gave the Dodgers the best win projection ever, over 100 as an over under, which is a pretty insane number most seasons, especially because projection systems are known to look for downside in a team. We always kind of joked when Friedman was with the Rays that what would happen if this GM who builds a winning team so easily with no money had money to spend. And this is kind of what you get when a very, very competent front office gets a lot of money to work with. Because, I mean, they don't even have David Price in the rotation. That's just, oh, he's just hanging around the roster in the bullpen. I mean, he hasn't been great so far. But when David Price isn't making your rotation, you probably have pretty good depth. And it's hard to see. The Dodgers' biggest enemy probably isn't anything to do with the team construction. It's just how playoffs are designed, where you're going to have to win a five-game series. Baseball's rules are probably their biggest opponent, essentially.
Dan, we have about a minute to go here. Corbin Burnes, 40 strikeouts, no walks. Obviously not sustainable, but what is the peak here for Corbin Burnes this year?
Well, I think this is the peak, because if this isn't the peak, what he would do at his peak would be frightening. I mean, he's throwing even harder this year. He's throwing 97, 98 now to go along with this. He might be the best pitcher in baseball, and that seems a little weird after a couple years ago. I mean, I thought the home run rate in 2019 was fluky, but this is just unreal what he's done.
Jacob DeGrom, though, still the favorite in your mind to win NL Cy Young?
It's DeGrom until something happens.
Yeah.
It would be nice if the Mets would score a run from him someday.
They face Eric Fetty tomorrow. I like their chances, coming from a Nats fan.
Mets will find a way.
That's 1-0 Nats into the eighth inning, probably, Tim. Come on now.
Dan, great stuff, man. Appreciate the insight, as always.
But, thanks for having me on, guys.
There he is, Dan Zimborski from Fangraphs, at D Zimborski on Twitter. Do we want to just stare at what's going to happen here in the 10th inning?
Something bad's going to happen for the Mets. It's just a matter of what. We've already seen the Mets win a game by a walk-off hit by pitch in controversial fashion this year, Tim.
I feel like your soul has just been crushed as a Mets fan. You're down on energy.
You know what the funny part, the funny and sad part is? You probably could survey about 100 Met fans when the Mets had a runner at third and nobody out in the top half of this inning. And I would probably say less than 30% would have expected them to get the run in, even with the top of the order coming up.
Well,
that's how beaten down we are.
Yeah, we'll find out what happens with the New York Mets here shortly. We will get back to some draft discussion. Mm-hmm. There was an interesting tweet today from Peter Schrager regarding offensive linemen and a couple names that I don't think many people had on their radars to go in the first round. So we'll discuss that. JVT later in the hour as well. And, hey, the Mets lost. It is the nightcap here on VSiN. It is the nightcap here on VSiN and the Mets-Cubs game. Well, the over didn't hit. It wasn't a bad beat, but it certainly didn't make someone on this desk happy. A bases loaded, one-out situation for the Mets in the top of the 10th led to no runs, an inning-ending double play. Cubs loaded the bases, and Jason Hayward came through with an RBI single to right field. So no one in the NL East is above 500. The Mets are 7-7. The Phillies are 9-9, Marlins 8-9, Braves 8-10, and the Nats 7-9. Everyone within one game, kind of what we expected. And our last guest, Dan Zimborski, was basically said it's going to be a fun division, and that's, you know, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's comparable to the NFC East because there was no chance, no team in there who legitimately had a chance, in my opinion, to win a Super Bowl as the year went on. I mean, the Braves still have a chance. I mean, the Phillies and Mets have talent, man.
Look, when you have frontline pitching like the Mets do, you have a chance in a five-game series.
Right, you're still missing Carlos Carrasco,
Yeah, you're still missing Syndergaard. They're both Carrasco's supposed to be back beginning of May. Syndergaard, they hope, June. Look, the other thing is, too, is with the Mets at least, the Mets have not hit at all, Tim. And their lineup has too much pop in it to not hit at all for the whole season. So, Even though the cynic in me as the Met fan wants to just complain and say, oh, the season's over 14 games in. The 14 games in, they're 7-7. They were just swept by a bad team and are tied for first place.
Right.
And they haven't hit at all. So I'm actually a little bit calmer than I normally be. By the way, Tim, I'll ask you this. Who's the only team in the NL East with a positive run differential right now?
Phillies?
That would be the Miami Marlins.
If
the score holds right now, they're losing 3-0 to the Giants in the bottom of the sixth. That will still be the case because the Marlins are a +4 coming into tonight.
Padres and Dodgers 1-0 top five. I'm kicking myself. Didn't play the first five under. And the Lakers make a little run here. 76-74 right now, midway through the third quarter. AD made his return 16 minutes, 2 of 10 from the field, a handful of rebounds as well. And I think Luka Doncic just made a ridiculous circus shot. We'll talk to JVT later on in this hour, get his thoughts on the return to AD, what that means for the Lakers, futures market, and all of that beauty. I do want to check out that tweet earlier today from Peter Schrager and of the NFL Network. And Fox as well. And, you know, it's an interesting one because Peter Schrager said, on the O-line, vibe I get, Sewell and Slater will go top 13, 13 being the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And in that 14-25 range, there'll be a run of the following in no particular order. Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, Christian Darrisaw, his over-under at 16.5. Elijah Vera Tucker, no surprise there, over under 16.5. And then Tevin Jenkins, over under 23.5. Then this is where I got, this is where I found it very intriguing. Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame, his over under currently at Circus Sports is 44.5. And then Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma, who earlier today was at 47.5, it is now down to 43.5. So Peter Schrager, by the way, in the tweet, did put maybe Eichenberg, maybe Humphrey, but if both of those names are flirted in the first round, Jeff, I think you got to look under on both Humphrey and Eichenberg. I played both under. And, you know, I also think there's the possibility of a team like the Bengals at 5, they go with a guy like Ja'Marr Chase because they feel like top end of the second round, they can get a quality tackle.
Yeah, I bet Eichenberg in the pre-show tonight with the discussion of all of us that we had. Look, 44.5, there's so many teams that need offensive linemen in this league, as always, Tim. So a quality one like him, and again, he's not quite in that top grouping, but look, at 44.5, back end of the first round for Eichenberg and Humphrey make a little bit of sense to me.
Since 2011, Brian Kelly's left tackle has been a first-round pick.
Pretty good.
Zach Martin, Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey. Will it be Liam Eichenberg? Maybe. Peter Schrager says that's exact words. Maybe. Talk some running backs. On the other side is the Nightcap here on VSiN. With all the spring sports betting action, you need the VSiN experts to stay ahead of the game. The best place to start is VSiN.com, of course, where we are covering baseball, the NHL, NBA playoff races, the NFL draft, and every game on the schedule to give you the betting edge. While you're there, get all the latest Vegas odds, check out our bet tracker and parlay calculator tools, read in-depth articles from our team, including betting strategies from the basic to advanced theory, and you can also listen to our VSiN shows 24/7 for free. Start your daily betting at VSiN.com and check out all of our subscription options. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN, headed to the bottom of the fifth out in Los Angeles, 1-0. Padres leading the Dodgers, over under in the first 5 was 4, and the Padres on the cover the first 5 plus 155. Decent little chunk of change there. Weather's pitching pretty well so far. 232 to go. How about this? In Dallas, the Lakers, Jeff, are going off in the third quarter. 35-21. They have outscored the Mavericks with 232 to go in the third quarter. Dennis Schroeder, 21 points and 12 assists. He has been having a monster game. I just saw Dave McMenamin saying that he didn't know what was more impressive, the play of Dennis Schroeder or Kevin Harlan's calls in the third quarter. He said both of them are on fire. But, yeah, right now, 86-83, if you had an under ticket at 215.5, you are not feeling great right
now.
Yeah,
you're in a little bit of trouble. Put it kindly there on that ticket if you have an under there. Look, again, this would be another one in the string of losses that Dallas has taken with an opportunity to get out of the 7 slot.
Yep.
Where you just can't take these losses. A win tonight gets Dallas into a tie with Portland for number 6, Tim. And right now you're letting the Lakers again another bucket for LA to go back up by 3. Anthony Davis was ineffective in his return in the first half, and yep. You're letting the Lakers, who again, they are playing basically as well as they possibly can with the unit that they have, but you can't lose this game if you're Dallas. You just can't.
88-87 right now, a minute and a half to go in the third quarter. We'll talk a lot of NBA, JVT coming up at the top of the hour. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus will join us at the top of the hour. Excuse me, JVT in less than 10 minutes. So he'll be sooner rather than later with JVT. Andre Drummond, 12-13 tonight. Luka Doncic, if you are wondering, 24 points, 7 assists, and Kristaps Porzingis with 19 points. Running backs. They have become an unpopular player in the first round of NFL drafts. And we certainly have a couple that are worthy of a discussion. Najee Harris, Travis Etienne being two of them. You know, last night on this show, our guest said Javonte Williams going 32 at Tampa Bay is something that he had heard as well. It's an over-under 43.5. Najee Harris, the only one right now at Circa with an over-under that's in the first round. I've seen some mock drafts that have shown Najee Harris, Jeff, going maybe to the Pittsburgh Steelers at 24. New Orleans, Mike Pritchard, heard him talking about New Orleans with a 17-game schedule, giving Alvin Kamara a little bit of help, so maybe they could be in the market for a running back. The current odds here at Circa for first running back selected, they, once again, they don't phrase it that way. They have a group of running backs, and it's the three that are expected to get drafted the highest in Harris, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and Javonte Williams. Here are the odds. This was earlier today, so we've got some updates because Najee Harris was a massive favorite, still the favorite at minus 140. This is right before the show. Travis Etienne down plus 165, and money coming in on Williams cut in half. Now at 6-1 to be the first running back selected out of that group. I actually like Travis Etienne a little bit. You know, it's starting to get borderline a price that I don't love, but at plus 165, Travis Etienne intrigues me at that price.
Yeah, Tim, I tend to agree with you. Elliot Crist on with us last night, talking up Williams out of North Carolina, potentially number 32 to the defending champion Buccaneers. But look, Pittsburgh is still one of those teams in the old school mindset of a running back is still worthy of a higher draft pick, even though they haven't done it in a while. This feels like Pittsburgh is going to take a back at 24. I still lean it being Harris, even though Etienne's a better pass catcher than Harris is.
Yeah, and 48 catches this past year.
And for what Ben Roethlisberger is at this point of his career, which I don't think he's any good anymore, Tim, the running back's going to be a critical piece to that offense. And he's going to be able to, again, not that Harris can't catch the football, but Etienne's a better pass catcher than Harris is. And if I were Pittsburgh at 24, I would take Travis Etienne if I'm going to take running back. Again, I don't know if I'd take running back if I were Pittsburgh, but if you're going to go running back, Etienne would be the play for me at 24.
Yeah, both of them, if you just look at their numbers, certainly can catch the ball, but I agree. I think Travis Etienne is more dynamic out of the backfield in catching passes. Looking at the numbers, Etienne, 48 catches this year out of the backfield for 588 yards, so 12.3 yards per clip. Year prior, which I was still stunned he came back for his senior year, 37 catches, 432 yards. Najee Harris, 27 catches as a junior, 43 last year. So, once again, no slouch coming out of the backfield. But, yeah, he is a guy that kind of that bell cow, maybe Travis Etienne, more of a I think both of them can. Najee Harris is more of that Derrick Henry light mold. He's just a beast. And Travis Etienne is not a slight dude, but I would think he's more of the, you know, the scat back type of feel coming out of the backfield. So, once again, I just go back to last year. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, no one thought he was going to be the first running back selected. It ultimately comes down to people, the teams have different thoughts on running backs on the back end of drafts, and that's why I would lean towards Etienne. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but that would be the way I would kind of look a little bit.
That again, Williams at 12-1. I'm kind of mad at myself. I just didn't throw a small bet on Williams at 12-1. But look, I think ETN, anything north of +150, still probably good.
The Mavericks have closed the quarter on a high note. They lead the Lakers 94-90. So we'll be on cover watch heading into the fourth quarter in Dallas. Mavs are laying 3.5. And speaking of the Lakers and the Mavericks, we'll talk some NBA next with JVT right here on the Nightcap. When you're hiring, there's no luxury of time. So instead of waiting for people to see your sponsored post, invite them to apply more at Indeed.com/credit. It is the Nightcap, live from the Circus Sportsbook as the Padres take a 2-0 lead over the Dodgers in the top of the sixth. Trent Grisham just blasted a home run to right field. Before we bring in our next guest, JVT, I do want to bring up the graphic we were just talking about, running back to be selected first. And the graphic we have is correct. I was reading the wrong odds because BetMGM has first running back selected Harris, ETN, and Williams at -140 for Harris, ETN at +165, and Williams at +$6. Circa still has these current odds, which is Harris -185, ETN +177, and Javonte Williams at 12-1. So if you like Javonte Williams or Travis Etienne, better odds here at Circa. If you like Najee Harris, better odds at BetMGM. All right, let's get to JVT, our senior NBA analyst, at MeJVT on Twitter. Mavericks and Lakers, final game on the board tonight. Can you really make much of anything from what we saw tonight from Anthony Davis, which was, you know, ineffective, just 17 minutes like we expected, 2 of 10 from the field? Anything that you take away from a limited sample size like that for AD?
That he played, right? I think that's about it, that he's back on the floor, that he's going to get ready to go. Look, the Lakers, as we've kind of talked about, Tim, you know, throughout this entire season, since Davis has been down, since LeBron has been down, their goal is just get to the postseason with both those guys on the court. So the fact that he's out there and that he's playing, that LeBron could be back within a week or 2 weeks, you know, Frank Vogel the other day pretty mum on what exactly the status is for LeBron. But the point is, come May 16th, both of those guys should be on the floor. Both of those guys should be healthy as we head into the postseason. So I think the takeaway is just that good that you got him out there without incident. You just ramp up the workload from there.
JVT, the most likely opponent for the Lakers in the first round is Denver. Since Jamal Murray tore his ACL, 4 straight wins for the Nuggets. Do you make anything out of this hot streak more than it's just the fallen star for a theory for these first few games without Murray?
Not entirely, right? I mean, it's 4 games, obviously a very short sample size. You look at a couple of the opponents, it hasn't been the best of opponents. Obviously, you get a really good win over Memphis, but Portland hasn't been good shakes. You have the Houston Rockets in there, which I think we know we can chalk up that win. And then, of course, the Miami Heat, who, you know, have been a really abhorrent offensive team, Jeff, throughout this entire season. So you get credit for who's in front of you, right? And you win 4 games without your star on the floor, and especially right after you lose him. But we'll see what happens in this big picture, right? You know, I think the one thing that really worries me with Denver, as you've watched them over these 4 games, the rotation of point guard, especially because Monte Morris has been a little banged up, you know, it's not great. Facundo Campazzo's really cool story, plucky little guard, but he's little. And a lot of these playoff series, you know, when you get a little bit more of the matchup hunting with Facundo Campazzo on the floor, he is going to get hunted. And so I think in the span of like a 7-game set over some of these bigger backcourts that they're going to start to face in the postseason, I think that's kind of a worry. But I think over this 4-game stretch, look, you get credit for what you've been doing. Offense fell off a little bit over the last 2 games, and defensively over the last 2 games, defensive ratings of 114.2 and 114.1. So not stuff you like to see, but to me, it's more about big picture and some of these matchups. And that matchup at point guard, when you start to see Campazzo out there for some long stretches in terms of minutes, I think that's where you get a little worried when you project some of these series when you get to the postseason.
Talking to Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst at MeJVT on Twitter. You know, we've talked so much about awards, and you talk about them, you know, constantly write about them for Point Spread Weekly as well. The rookie of the year market, when LaMelo Ball, when the news came out that he would be back in the lineup, the odds went right back to him being a massive favorite. He's now minus 305 at DraftKings, while Anthony Edwards is sitting there at 2-1. And, you know, you wrote the article when LaMelo was initially injured that let's wait until the last second to fire away on this. We're surprised that LaMelo came back. Do you agree with this market adjustment that LaMelo is now back to similar odds of what he was when he was healthy? And anything at all of interest on Anthony Edwards at 2-1?
So I would say, well, first off, with Anthony Edwards, I would say no, Tim. You know, I've been pretty staunch in talking about the fact that, you know, when he got injured, I think I wrote the article like the next day that LaMelo Ball was going to be the rookie of the year, right? And that was the assumption that he wasn't even going to play. So I think when you look at this overall, it's LaMelo Ball's award to lose. Now, do you want to go out there? Do you want to lay, you know, this big of a price? Absolutely not, right? You know, this is a massive price for given the status where he's at right now. So this award, there's really nothing left. And I do think, you know, I talked about this on the podcast today, which, you know, we recorded today. Tom Byrne joined us, so you check that out wherever you get your podcast. The concept of value is something we always talk about, right? But I think value is different when you're talking about value in the sense of a team winning a championship on the futures board, winning a series, whatever it is, as opposed to value in an awards market, right? If you're looking at value in terms of a basketball team playing basketball on the floor, you know, you can latch on to certain statistical anomalies that you believe will play out over the course of a seven-game series over a larger sample size, and thus you find value in that number. But finding value on an awards board is different, right? Because there's a human element of people voting for those awards. And I think that's where I get a little turned off with, you know, talking about like betting Steph Curry for 100-1 to win MVP. Like, right. Theoretically, is there value for that guy? Sure. But are you going to get, like, value is he's going to go from getting one first place vote to like four, right? And that's not something that's really going to get you an award. So I don't really find much value in an award like Rookie of the Year, because I do think LaMelo Ball is going to be the guy to win that. And I just don't know if there's going to be anything that pushes Anthony Edwards forward. But I will say, look, hey, today, when it comes to the Charlotte Hornets and what you saw on the floor, LaMelo Ball didn't play today, right? So that's really crazy that he's already -305. And like, we haven't even seen him back yet.
JVT, the Knicks have covered 11 in a row. They've won 8 in a row. They're up to the 4th slot in the Eastern Conference. I know you talk about it a lot on the podcast today, but are we at the point now where we at least have to take the Knicks seriously as a potential one series winner and out now in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Yeah, Jeff, I think we do if they get the right draw, right? Like, if they're going to be in that 4-5 slot and, you know, they get a relatively winnable series over like Atlanta, then yeah, 100%. You know, that is a realistic path to an Eastern Conference semifinals berth. Now, personally, depending on the price, I would bet on Atlanta in that series, you know, given the fact that they're fully healthy, right? We just watched Trae Young go down in that game against the Knicks. So I do think Atlanta has an edge, right? Even go back to that game. They were down, 7-8 points when Trae Young goes down. Hawks were kind of comfortably controlling the pace and the tempo and everything like that before Young goes down. But I think they are a very realistic threat if they stay in that 4-5 matchup, right? Because once you start to fall past that, you're talking about a 3-6 matchup with Milwaukee. You're talking about a 2-7 matchup potentially, right, with anyone of Brooklyn or Philadelphia. Multiple teams which they're winless against, too. So that becomes a problem. And you're also messing with a play-in scenario, too, which, by the way, it's nutty about where the Eastern Conference stands as a whole. Talk about the New York Knicks winning 8 consecutive games. You mentioned the 11 straight covers. They're still well within danger of falling into the play-in at this point. So it gives you an idea of where you're at with the pecking order. But I would say overall to your question, yes. Like, if they stay in control of that 4 seed, they draw the Atlanta Hawks, they draw potentially, you know, a Miami Heat if they can make that climb, I think that's kind of a dangerous spot for them. I don't think they want any part of Boston. So theoretically, I think they just want to see Atlanta.
JVT, they're hard to find. I think there are some shops that have it, but if there are Coach of the Year odds out there, and maybe you found them, is it Thibodeau? Is it Monty Williams? Is it Quinn Snyder? Who would you cast your vote to, and who would you be looking for in the odds market if they're out there?
So I think when you're looking at a war, they are available. You know, I think I saw Thibodeau at like 5-1, somewhere in that range. It's Thibodeau is a good story, right? And the Knicks are a really good story, but I think the allure of winning the number one overall seed in the Western Conference is going to push voters enough, right? This Jazz team has been downright dominant through stretches. Remember that 22-2 run at the beginning of the season they were on, covering numbers left and right. I think they were, 21-3 against the spread during that 24-game stretch. So I think it's going to be between the two Western Conference teams. You know, again, going back to our brief talk about the value, there could be theoretical value in Tibbs, but I just don't know if he pushes enough to win this award. But I'll say the difference with a Coach of the Year race, especially with Tom Thibodeau, is how much does the media who votes for this award buy into what Thibodeau has in his back pocket, which is, hey, boys and girls, I brought back MSG, right? Like, I brought the Knicks back to relevance. How much does the narrative of the New York Knickerbockers coming back to life help Thibodeau in regard to winning Coach of the Year? You know, that's a little different facet than what we're talking about when we're finding value in other awards markets. So I think that's maybe something there for Tibbs, right? When we were talking about like 20-1, like not even 2 weeks ago, that was really high for a guy where he had this team at this point. But I think it comes down to Monty Williams and Quinn Snyder, and I think Quinn Snyder's probably in the driver's seat. He is the favorite to win it wherever you can find these odds. The Jazz have just been too good, and they've been a really good story in their own right with how dominant they've been this year.
JVT, it's not a not a spot on a nightcap without bringing up the Washington Wizards,
of course,
who are now in the 10 hole right now in the Eastern Conference. DraftKings right now has them, again, it's a whole different ballgame getting to the bracket, but has them to reach the bracket at 3-1. Is the boat too far gone on betting Washington at this point, or you see those teams that are ahead of them and, hey, they could beat Indiana and then have a shot against a Hornet team that's banged up or a Miami team that just can't play offense right now?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Jeff. And I would say, no, it's not too far gone. And, you know, I've had this kind of like, I've wrestled with this with the Boston Celtics, with the Washington Wizards. The common thread is, and, you know, the Miami Heat to a certain extent too, the common thread is all three of those teams, guys, were ravaged by COVID at the beginning of the year. You know, Bradley Beal and the Washington Wizards were really held straight, you know, held down by that. Remember, Russell Westbrook was coming off of a very serious injury as well coming into the season, did not play very well at the beginning of the season. You know, I picked the Wizards to be the eighth seed in our NBA preseason guide this year. I thought that those two were going to work really well together. And over these last, you know, 10 to 12 games, we have kind of started to see the team that I expected a little bit more of, right? A little bit better defensively, a little bit better offensively, playing up a little bit more up tempo. You know, they're starting to kind of look like that. And I think I've kind of had to tell myself, like, hey, COVID's kind of messed with a lot of these teams, and maybe we're starting to see the real version of a lot of them in this second half of the year. So I would say, no, it's not too far gone. They're very realistically could make it into the postseason.
You can follow him on Twitter, at me, JVT. His write-ups every day, VSiN.com. And the podcast, Hardwood Handicappers, new episode out right now. JVT, appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, boys.
There he is, Jonathan Von Tobel. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, top of the hour. It's the Nightcap on VSiN.